So we left off, we're in Perek Yud Ches, and we begot up to Pasuk Vav. Actually, we saw it last time, just quickly review it and then see Zayin. Sifsei Chsil Yovo Viriv, Ufiv Lemahalumos Yikra. The Sfosayim, the lips of a Chsil, of a foolish person, Yovo Viriv. They come into an argument. We caught it last time from the Ben Yonah that Yavo'u sounds almost as if of their own accord. Now, Ben Yonah says that the nature of a foolish person is, you know, he almost can't open up his mouth without being argumentative. You know, it's par for the course in life to have differences of opinion with people, you know, but the Ksil, the foolish person, it's almost as if, you know, his lips of his own accord bring him to a certain kind of argument with people. And Rabbi Yonah writes, and again, I think we can, you know, certainly identify without verbally identifying people, but we can certainly relate to people, that the Rabbi Yonah writes, you know, every time they speak, they yell, you know, they're trying to put down the other person, and that's just the way that they converse with people, is through this fighting. Upivle mahalumos yikra, and his mouth calls out to blows, you know, literally, you know, that, you know, he wants to escalate the fight until it actually turns into something physical. Rashi interprets the word mahalumos as yisurim, you know, suffering, that, you know, kare li yisurim lahavim olav, that his engagement, you know, the kind of way he deals with people, ultimately is going to cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to punish him by bringing Yisurim, by bringing afflictions upon him as a kind of punishment. Let's see Zayin. So, Pich Sil Mechitolo, the mouth of a fool brings destruction upon himself. Usvas of Mokesh Nafsha, and his lips is a trap, a snare, for his very soul. Now, on the surface, this is really just a follow-up to Pasuk Vav. You know, Pasuk Vav described the mannerisms of Ksil, of a foolish person in this context, meaning one who doesn't follow the Chachmas HaTorah, the wisdom that Torah puts down. So a foolish person is constantly getting into fights with people. And as Pasuk Zayin, that's going to be Mechitolo. Ultimately, it's going to be his downfall. You know, the lips that utter all of the kind of fighting words that we spoke about before is Mokesh Nafsho. It's ultimately going to be a snare for his neshama itself. Now, this could be understood, just again, before you see the commentaries, this could be understood, you know, in terms of God's divine punishment, that God will ultimately punish the person who, you know, deals with people in such a terrible fashion. I think it's perfectly legitimate as well just to understand it as a natural consequence of his actions, which is, again, we know from our experiences oftentimes what happens. The guy opened his mouth just, you know, one time too many, and he opened up his mouth to the wrong guy. The guy turned around and smacked him. And, you know, Piksil Mechita Lo, you know, the guy's downfall. You know, the Mefarshim over here types the word Mechita, you know, downfall, as being related to the word Shever, to be smashed. And sometimes that happens very literally. The guy, you know, your mouth off to the wrong guy. Yeah, the guy turns around and says, yeah, chutzpah, yeah, I'll show you a thing or two, and boom. You know, his mouth was the source of his destruction. Not in a esoteric, you know, divine punishment kind of way, but in a very real life, lower east side kind of way. Yeah, I know.
What's the show like? Where does that come from?
That's a good question. What's the shoresh of it?
Have we seen this word before?
It does appear elsewhere in Tanakh. I mean, it's not the only place that it appears. I don't know. I mean, there's a verb to be chosa, ches, saf, hey, which is the shawish. That means to move around, like to be chosa kecholim. Means to move around coals, you know, to turn them up and down and over. So it could be that that's, I mean, mechita is a noun, you know, but it could be in terms of the verb that's related to it, you know, when you have this set, when you have the coals on the fire and you're stoking them and you're turning them upside down, and they're, I'm sorry,
not a good thing to do on Shabbos.
Right? But in other words, you know, it's one lump and you're breaking it up into the different pieces. You know, maybe that's the relationship over here. It's interesting. Again, just to continue that on a pshat level. So peak seal mechita lo. So the mechita, the downfall, the breaking apart of the seal, is, you know, oftentimes comes as a result of things that he said. But even if not, you know, even if he goes through life and he mouths off to people and people are afraid of him and they don't start up with him, and, you know, he goes through life thinking that he succeeded in life. You know, I mean, after all, you know, he mouthed off, he put people in their place and nobody gave him a hard time. The second half of the pasuk addresses the damage that this kind of talk does to himself. Svas of Mokei Shnafsha. His soul is going to be caught in the snare as a result of what his lips do. So the way I understand, just on a pashut pshat, that second half of the pasuk is, even if the guy never turns around and smacks you, but a person who always talks down to others and yells at people and is an aggressive kind of personality, there's something that happens to his neshama, to his nefesh, which is very, very negative. You know, the way that his lips act is a mokesh for his nefesh. It's a snare for his neshama. Right. In other words, he becomes less of a person. He becomes less of a human being by result of you know, the way that he deals with other people. Now, he may not realize that. You know, in fact, he may feel that he's lording over other people, that he's actually a more successful person in life. But he doesn't realize that all the time he's whittling away at the neshama that he has inside. So again, just even before seeing, you know, we'll see the album here in a minute, but, you know, the different parts of the pasuk seem to speak, you know, we always, when we read Mishlei, we always ask ourselves the question, what does this add? You know, I mean, if it's just saying that it's bad to be a difficult person, okay, I mean, we didn't need the wisdom of Solomon, you know, to share that idea with us, but, you know, the concept that when you're a difficult person, sometimes it will come back to haunt you directly, and even if it doesn't, it whittles away at the kind of person that you are. And there's much less of yourself as a neshama, you know, to be able to rise to spiritual heights if you're a very difficult person to deal with. Let's take a look at the Malbim. If you look in the Malbim's on the facing page on Reish Gimel, the next to last line from the bottom, Piksil Mechitolo, Usvasov Mokesh Nafsho, Hamechito Hu Hashever, Mechito is breaking, Vamokesh Hu Kodem LeMechito. Now, a snare, writes the Malbim, comes before the breakage, the mechita. Again, this is classic Malbim, where, you know, every word has to be analyzed in its nuances. So a mokesh and a mechita are not exactly the same thing. In fact, they come in sequence. First, you imagine the animal running through the jungle. So first, the animal is snared by the mokesh, right? I think in modern day Hebrew, I think mokesh is a landmine, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, There was a very famous Israeli song, I think it came out after the Yom Kippur, where Balad al HaChovesh, you know, the ballad of the medic, you know, and so one of the words, I mean, if you're writing poetry, Chovesh and Mokesh happen to rhyme with one another, so it was, you know, they put that word in. So another way, a Mokesh, you know, is, you know, the snare is what, you know, what the animal would be caught in as it's running through the jungle, and the Mechita, the breaking apart, you know, is what would happen after it's caught by the Mokesh. So the pasuk means as follows, says the Malbim. Bisvasov hachitzonim, yaselo mokesh, shabo tilkad nafsho bipach yokush, with his svasayim, with his lips, which are external, the foolish person will create a mokesh for himself, a snare that will catch his neshama, uvipiv shuhu bedibur hapanimi b'chachma yigmaris hamechita. And his mouth, now mouth in the Malbim's understanding is further internal than the lips. The lips are the outward manifestation of his foolishness, his folly. The peh is what's further inside. It's really the chachma itself that he possesses. Then yigmaris hamechita. That will finish off the breaking apart of this person. Bisvasav tukash nafsho lebe'er shachas. With his lips, his soul will be caught and brought down to the netherworld. Uvamash yikro b'fiv yiyeh mechita gam l'gufa. But what is expressed with his pet will be not only a source of destruction for his neshama, but also for his body. Ki ani shenu Hashem gam ba'onesh haguf, because ultimately his body is going to be punished as well.
What's the chiddush there? The punishment, isn't the punishment always on the guf?
No, I get it, because you could say that the punishment is for olam haba. Olam haba, the guf, is not going to be punished. It's not going to simply be the neshama. And I think he's stressing that God is going to punish this
in
person,
this
ilam olam hazeh, which,
okay.
Again, I think, you know, going back to the way we touched the pasuk originally, often can be just expressed in terms of what goes around comes around. You know, if you've got to be a bulvan when you deal with people, so ultimately people are going to give you a hard time, and you'll be punished in a very olam hazadik sense, you know, very real life kind of sense, you know, not necessarily waiting to olam haba. Yeah, right. In other words,
the punishment is right now.
Right. In other words, a liar. The biggest punishment for a liar is that nobody believes
them. They don't believe me.
Right. You know, the crying wolf kind of scenario. Yeah. Okay. Let's take a look in Ches. Divrei Nirgon k'misla hamim. The words of a Nirgon are fighting words that bring to blows. Take a look in the Mitzudas David. Divrei Nirgon, Divrei Mislonein, Hemo Koshim Kimakos Habishabros. A person who's a Nirgon, who's a complainer, right? Writes the Mitzudas David. The person who's a complainer, his words are as difficult as blows that break the person apart. Continues the pasuk, which is go back to the pasuk for a minute, then we'll keep reading the Mitzvahs David. Vehem yardu chadrei vaten, and they descend to the depths of the stomach. Back in the Mitzvahs David. Ve'od hem yardim chadrei vaten. Right? Not only are the words of the complainer as hard as blows, but they pierce a person down to his innards. Avol amakos hema mimal al haguf. Right, despite the fact that the blows are on the body, you know, when you hit a person, you hit him up on the top of his body. Says the pasuk, when a person complains, it's like hitting you on your body, and that you feel the pain goes into your stomach. It's a pain which is both external as well as internal. Ve'achaz b'derech melitza. I'm back in the Mitzvahs David. This is a melitza. This is a parable in the following sense. It's a turn of phrase in the following sense. Ka'omer hinei hamakos hashehem imal noach liraposam. If a person is injured on his body, on his skin deep wound, so that's relatively easy to fix. Masha'en kein makos b'chadrei beten, as opposed to if there's some kind of internal injury which the person suffers, so that's much harder to fix. V'chein kosher l'rapos divrei hamislonein. Similarly, when a person complains, it's not just that he hurts you outside, which, you know, you could deal with, but he hurts the person inside, which is a lot harder. You know, when the person, you know, in physical terms, when a person is experiencing internal bleeding. And again, especially for most of history before surgery was that well developed, the person is bleeding internally. There's not much that that medicine was able to do about it. So such is the way of the words of the complainer. They strike home, and it's very, very difficult to undo the damage which the complainer has done through his words.
So whose kishkas are hurt? The complainers or the complainees?
Right. Right.
He opens with interpretation.
100%.
He's
right.
Destroying himself. It goes to his stomach.
Right, 100%. I think the immediate pshat is the complainee. In other words, you know, when you complain against somebody, you know, that haunts that person forever, and it's very difficult to shake, you know, the terrible feelings which are brought about by the complaints. But I think it's equally true, you know, that it has an effect on his neshama as well.
So it's not just a complaint, it's a complaint against another person.
Right, you know, although, you know, the truth is, it's bad for a person's neshama to constantly complain, even if no one else is the target of your complaint. As a person who goes through life thinking that, you know, life is lousy, you know, even if it's not, you know, life is lousy because I stubbed my toe today. Life is lousy because, you know, the line at the supermarket was too long. In other words, whatever it is, you know, even if there's no particular person who's the object of my complaints, nonetheless, when I go through life with such a negative attitude, it sucks away at the neshama 100%. It goes down to the chadre vatan. And, you know, the person could be complaining against himself, and he could be the victim, you know, of his complaints. Yeah.
I remember the Mayor Koch used to say, I don't get ulcers, I give ulcers. He also said, he had a sign on his desk which said, if you say it can't be done, you're right, you can't do it.
Right.
In other words, he dealt with a complainant's like...
Right.
He reversed things like...
Right. It's interesting to note that in the Pasuk, you know, the Pasuk doesn't, you know, the Chiddush of the Pasuk, according to the Mitzvah David, is that the blows which the complainer, you know, throws at other people, you know, go down to the Kishkas, you know, that they affect the person in a very internal fashion. But the Pasuk doesn't lose sight of the fact that it also hurts externally. In other words, it's really, you know, it's bad on two levels. It's not just that the person is going to be hurt inside, but oftentimes the complainer will bring about immediate consequences of his complaint. Look, a guy complains, guy in the workplace complains against, you know, a coworker. The coworker gets fired. You know, I mean, could very, very easily happen. So it's not just that in some esoteric way, you know, you're damaging him, you're making him feel bad. No, I mean, there are divrei nirgun kemislahamim. You know, the words, right, and there are immediate consequences and there are obvious consequences. Yeah. In other words, when the person complains, you know, it's like blows. I mean, it does affect the person externally as well. It's not just something that goes down to the other person's kishkas. Right?
What if just a person's right in complaining?
Right, right. So
what if it's a rightful complaint?
Right, so the nirgun... Right, in other words, near gun, like the word lamdon or gazlon or all these other, terms that you have in Hebrew, means someone who complains continuously. That's his personality, right? His personality is that he always does this. So in other words, a complaint, you know, sometimes a complaint is correct. I mean, you know, the neighbors next door have been playing loud music at 3 o'clock in the morning for the past year, and it's just enough is enough. You know, I mean, you have to do something about it, right? But the nirgun is more than that. The nirgun is a person who if you put him into Gan Eden, he would have complaints. You know, I mean, what's all this music that I hear? You know, I mean,
what's with the birds?
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, all the sunshine. You know, it's,
you can also say, like we were talking about, who's being affected. You can say it's both. You're affecting the external of the person who you're putting the diatribes on,
right.
But in the process of abusing him, there's something you do, it's something to yourself, like physically, you know, people get ulcers when they're constantly screaming and they're very angry.
Right.
They're not at peace in themselves. So they have an inverse effect, but they're messing up other people's lives externally.
And they're messing up themselves.
But in
as
the
well.
Process of doing the external, the internal is, right. Their own internal is being affected.
Right. So in other words, you're saying the first half of the pasuk is what you do to the other guy,
right.
The second half of the pasuk is what...
What's happening
what,
to you.
What you do to yourself, 100%. It's just, on the concept of gazlan, you know, alamda and that sort of thing. So, you know, in our parlance, we often speak of a lamdon as someone who's very insightful in his learning. I think they say over from the Sfas Emes that that's not really what the word means. You know, the same way that a gazlan means somebody who habitually steals, a lamdon just means somebody who habitually learns. You know, even
teaches.
If it's right, but even if he's not somebody who's particularly creative, or you know, sometimes people get depressed in yeshiva. You know, I don't feel that I'm really growing in my learning. I'm not such a lamdan. And the Sfas Emes basically told people, you know, if you just learn a lot, that makes you into a lamdan. Lamdan just means somebody who you know, does a lot of learning. The same way a gazlan does a lot of stealing, you know, it's a havdil, you know, but a lamdan does a lot of learning. So a nirgun just does a lot of complaining. You know, he's the person who's made it his life's goal to just complain about anything that he finds himself in contact with.
Well, we're not suggesting that there's anything wrong with... complaining about oneself, unless I guess you do it to the extreme, self-criticism kind of thing.
Right, so I think that goes back to this idea of the nirgun as a constant, meaning it's appropriate for a person to engage in self-criticism. When it's constant, you know, when the person, you know, can't find anything good to say about himself, you know, so then... you know, so then actually it is the problem, you know, and we know that's, I mean, psychologically that's very, very difficult when a person has that sort of thing. I remember I was speaking to somebody recently, you know, and about a certain situation, and, you know, the person was asked, there were a couple of us in the room, the person was asked, you know, can you list off some milas about such and such a situation that you find yourself in? You know, it's difficult in a lot of ways, but there are a lot of pluses also. No, there's nothing positive about it. The conversation goes on 10 minutes later, and I pointed out to the fellow, you know, in the past 10 minutes, you listed off 4 or 5 good things about the situation you find yourself in now. What do you mean that there are no milas? He said, you know, yeah. It's funny, yeah. I didn't think about that, right? But I mean, that, you know, it's funny to tell it over, perhaps. But I mean, it's you know, it's something that a lot of us do, you know, ourselves without even thinking about it. Everything's terrible. What do you mean everything's terrible? You know, I remember I think Dr. David Pelkovitz, who's well known in the world of psychology. So I had the privilege of having him for a couple of you know, pastoral psychology classes at Yeshiva University. So he used to, you know, counsel Rabbanim. He still counsels Rabbanim. There's a very tremendous tendency. You're liked by everybody in the shul except 3 guys. And, you know, the natural tendency from the point of view of the Rav is to say, oh my gosh, everybody hates me. Now, again, it's not just Rabbanim, right? But, you know, oftentimes we go through life like that. I mean, what do you mean everybody hates you? You know, 97% of the people that you deal with, you know, they think the world of you. Yeah, but there's something human about focusing on, you know, the few rotten apples, you know, so to speak, the few difficulties that a person has. You know, a person has, it's very natural, but a person has to try to overcome that, you know, in, you know, just dealing with people. The Malbim takes this pasuk and applies it not so much to interpersonal relationships, but with the relationship we have with the Ribbono Shel Olam. If you look on page Reish Hey, it's the third line in of the, you know, from the top of the Malbim. Divrei Nirgon k'mislahavim. Min ha'she'ela zos yamod nirgon. Shegidro mishe mislonin tamir al Hashem shebro l'ra oso. V'sheharaos ba'olam himrav min hatovos. Vishitovlo shelo nivra. A nirgun is not just the guy who complains about others. A nirgun complains about the fact, about his lot in life. A nirgun is a guy who looks at God and says, God, you really did me, you stuck it to me by creating me and sticking me here in the world. He constantly complains against God. He considers God's having created to him to be bad. He says there's more evil in the world than there is good. It would be better had I not been created.
That's Gemara.
Right. So
how's he complaining against
God? So Gavaldik. I'll mention something. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal had a beautiful pshat in the Gemara. The Gemara in Erevin, you know, that Shelley's referring to, mentions that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai argued for 2.5 years whether Noach lo la'adam shlo nivra or Noach lo nivra. Right? Is it better? Is it better for man to have been created? Is it better for man not to have been created? And after 2.5 years of fighting or arguing, which, you know, would be fascinating to be a fly on the wall and know what those conversations were, right? But after 2.5 years of arguing, says the Gemara in Erevin, Nimnu v'gamru, that Noach lo la'adam shlo nivra, it would have been better for man not to have been created, but atosh nivra yifashbish b'maisa. But now that you're here, you might as well, you know, look into, you know, make the best of it, search your actions and try to do what's good. We referenced this on Yom Kippur in one of the piyutim, you know, nimnu v'gamru noach lo la'adam shlo nivra. We mentioned, I think, in Shacharis, in one of the piyutim we say on Yom Kippur. So Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal said, chas v'shalom, to say that Gemara implies that the consensus of the Chachamim was that, you know, better that a man should not have been created. Well, what do you mean? I mean, you're second-guessing God? You know, God thinks, obviously, it's better that we should have been created because he made us, right? So you're going to come along and say, we thought about it for 2.5 years and we decided that it's better that we shouldn't have been created. What kind of business is this? The Rav said, you have to read the Gemara carefully. It doesn't say, Tov lo la'adam shelo nivra. It says, Noach lo. Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. Noach means it would have been easier for him not to have been created. And basically, Rav Soloveitchik said what the Gemara is saying is like this. For sure, you know, the neshama faces challenges now that it comes down to earth, which it would not have experienced had the neshama just sat in Gan Eden forever and, you know, listened to the wonderful music and the rushing water and all of the wonderful things that are in Gan Eden, right? It's a challenge that man is placed on this earth and has to deal with the challenges of being here. but it's tov, it's good. You know, a challenge is a good thing. It's just noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. It's just,
it would... You wouldn't say like Rav Yosher Ben, you'd say the original pshat, that it's better for man not to have been created.
Well, for that...
I mean, the Dora Mabel, right? I mean,
for that Dora, okay. So we can argue that door, you know, but certainly the discussion of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai.
Even then, it was good that they were creative. It would have been better had they
done what was right.
Right.
But certainly even after the door, you know, even if you want to grant the point by the door, I'm out. But Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra. It's tov la'adam shenivra. It's a good thing that man was created. Vayar Elokim es kol asher asav ni tov me'od. You know, that was said right after the creation of man. But, you know, it's certainly Noach, it's easier, you know, had we not been created. It would have been easy, we would have had an easier job just sitting up there in Gan Eden and enjoying, right? So, again, that pshat, the Rebbe Soloveitchik, I think is a beautiful pshat. It works well with the Malbim over here, where the Malbim says, the point of view that Tovlo, remember, he says Lashon Tov, Tovlo la'adam shelo nivra, better for a man not to have been created, that's the complaint of the Nirgun, that's a negative thing, that's not the conclusion Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai reached after the 2.5 years of discussion. Ubezei yisloning tamid al hanhagas Hashem imo ki ozvo el amikre. This Nirgun thinks that God has just abandoned him to the fates, and you know he looks at his life as basically being, you know, one lousy thing after another. Dvarav kemislamim. His words are like blows. Ki'ilu Hashem maka oso tamid va'osa imo ros. What are the blows? He sees the blows in his life. This guy, when he looks out at his life, can only see the blows which God, in his view, is constantly afflicting him with. Ve'heim yardu chadrei vaten. They go down to the inner chambers of his belly. Rotsa lomar. Sheharos u'mahalumo sa'elo enom chutsa lo. This is like Freudian over here. Comes the Malbim and says, these blows which this guy sees as coming upon him constantly, they're all inside of him. It's all in his mind. Right? Chadrei Vatan over here, says the Malbim, is the equivalent of, you know, it's in his psyche. Right, but in other words, he's the one who dictates his situation. If he looks at the world as an unforgiving, negative place, that's the way it's going to be for him.
The power of suggestion.
The power of suggestion. I mean, Mavish, you know, the Malbim comes slightly before Freud, if I'm not mistaken. No, seriously, I mean, Freud, I think, is the second half of the 19th century. Right? If I'm not mistaken.
Freud is...
19th century, but I think the second half of the for the 19th century. Well, again, the Malbim is writing in the middle of the 19th century. So it's right around, you know, I think even a little bit before. Einom chutzalo, right? He writes, these things which he perceives are not, in fact, outside of him. They are not actually, he is not actually suffering these blows. Shehu b'dimyono, in his imagination, doeg tamid, he's a warrior.
Psychosomatic.
Yeah, right. He imagines, in his own mind, that anything that the other guy has, he lacks. V'chol tovos Hashem ki iluheim ra'os. And all of the good things that God bestows upon him, he sees them in his own mind as evil. K'moshal ha'ivrim shehizkir b'chovos ha'lavavos. K'moshal kasav b'mara al ha'elokim asa sa'adam yasha. Ba'ofen shemekar ha'ros heim ba'atzma uvedimyono. The source of all of these evils is himself and his own imagination. Udvarov be'atzma makim malamim oso. What is that which is hitting him and striking him? It's his own words. Right? Go back to the pasuk. Divrei nirgon kimis lahamim. The words of the complainer are like blows. Right? What blows on himself. They're not the real blows, but it's as if he creates the blows through his dvarim, through his words. Lo makos mi bachutz. If he would just stop complaining for a minute, he would actually discover that the world is a good place. Everything that God bestows upon him is a chesed, is a blessing. He would enjoy that which God gave him in this world. V'nafshel togil b'shuas Hashem, and his soul would rejoice in God's salvation. Shashem baras adam yoshev heichin akolu to'alta. God really created man and made everything for him. There's a great autobiography which was published by Rabbi Joseph Lukstein, a blessed memory. I think it was, he published either right before his death or posthumously. The title of the autobiography is a great title, and it's just worth walking around life knowing the title. God owes me nothing. Hmm. Right? It's a tremendous hashkafa to go through life with. I mean, if you start, you know, unfortunately this nirgun, you know, probably has the opposite point of view. God owes me everything. So if God owes me everything, so anything that goes wrong is already a complaint. You know,
It's the Malbim who brings up the complaint against God and makes the tie that all the complaints goes against God. The Nirgun, exclusive of the Malbim's tie, can be someone who's suffering through life and therefore he's complaining. It's not a question whether or not whether he believes that God owes him anything, not just that he's in bad shape and he's complaining.
Right. He's bitter.
That's all.
Right. But a lot of that goes back to the person's, you know, the way the person views his relationship with God. In other words, again, it's an easy thing.
Of God. It has nothing, because the complaints we're talking about, the first two types was against individual. He's complaining against individual. It has nothing to do with God, unless you want to say everything eventually does come to God, because everything's that's by Elohim. But the first two shots you can... Right. Just against the world. I mean, it's not God. It's people who he feels have offended him and have done him harm.
Right. But I think oftentimes when you talk to those people, you get, you know, so why are you kvetching against this person? I mean, you know, there's certain people, you know, the cashier rang up the wrong number initially. And then, you know, for the next month, you talk to the person, all they talk about is, you know, would you believe this cashier? It's like, get over it. You know, you bought the item, they corrected the mistake within 2 seconds of you bringing it to their attention. Just go on. Why are they so obsessed with the cashiers? I think, you know, oftentimes what it is the person's just angry at life. You know, the person's bitter at life. You know,
a persecution complex,
right? Or again, whether they say God or they don't say the word God, but in other words, whatever they see in their minds as being the force that drives life, they see as kind of out to get them, right? And the cashier is just one manifestation of this, this persecution that I'm going through in life. You know, God sent the cashier there, to give me a hard time so that I would suffer.
But that's very religious also, if you believe that everything comes from God. It is God who's sending.
But the religious perspective would be a little bit different. The religious perspective would be, the cashier was sent there because of something that I did, so now I have to look inward and, you know, change something, because this is a sign from God that I need to improve myself. As opposed to the complainer, the nirgun just says, God's, you know, smacking me around again for no good reason. You know, it's that, you know, that sadistic, you know, deity up there in heaven who's just, out to get...
Sadik Varali, I mean.
Yeah, and Ochinami. But in other words, the story that comes to mind is the story of the Rebbe Reb Zusha. You know, where the Rebbe Reb Zusha, again, you know, famous Hasidic Rebbe, you know, had nothing, mamash, poverty stricken, sick, and everything like that. So I think the story goes that they went to his brother, the Rebbe Reb Melech, and they asked him, you know, tell us about Sadek Viralis. He said, go see my brother Zusha. No, so the Hasidim go to see the Rebbe Reb Zusha, and they say, you know, we were sent to ask you about Sadek Viralo. And he looks at them and says, I don't understand what you're talking about. They sent you to me? But I have everything. Baruch Hashem, I have a roof over my head. You know, Baruch Hashem, I learn Torah. I'm able to daven every day. What can I possibly tell you about Sadek Viralo? Which is, you know, goes back to the Malmo's point. So much of this is perspective. You know, whether you're having a good life or a bad life, to a large extent, depends on what your perspective is. They quote from Rebbe Lezer Brook in one of the great Bali Musa in Eretz Yisrael, where he said that, you know, it's Sadek Viralo. It's never Tzadik Vira Li. You know, when the person says Tzadik Vira Li, you know, that somehow he internalizes, I'm a Tzadik and I'm suffering. No, you never hear about that. It's always a question of the abstract, because a person who's a Tzadik, you know, trains himself to look at the world, you know, I mean, in a sense, through rose-colored glasses. You know, you're able to see all of the good things about life and not get sucked. Yeah, life has its challenges and difficulties and the like, but that doesn't become the stress on, you know, what life is ultimately all about.
Actually, two things that you said. there are certain blows that human beings take, excuse me, or have taken, that really can destroy a person. I mean, God forbid, any Jew should have a man's wife and eight kids die.
Yeah.
Come on. That's not the register girl.
Right, no, absolutely.
There are blows that literally can destroy a person's entire life.
Yeah.
A degree that would be un... The other thing about God owes me nothing. Yeah, God does owe me something, and I'm going to tell you why. When you have a child, you owe that child. You have to raise that child. It's your job. You owe it to the child to feed it. We're going to leave it there? I mean, you have to die for that kid. That's right. You owe it. God created us. He does owe us something. He does. He does. He owes us something. Same way we owe our children something. I don't know on what level you would put that, but those are two things that stand out to me, that there are blows in life that are... We understand you. I had to wait in line. That's, you know... But there are horrible, horrible blows that people suffer that can take their life away. Destroy their entire life.
Hey, look, you know, it's very easy to sit here on a Mishlei Sashir Sunday morning with the cake and the tea and, you know, just talk about them the way we do. I mean, 100%. I mean, what's very, very inspiring in life is to see people who have gone through those kind of situations and yet pull themselves up. You know, and
many, but not all.
Not all, right? 100%.
A lot of them were shattered in the way. Not everyone was Elie Wiesel who did the gigs and wrote the books.
100%.
Other people are institutionalized.
100%. Wow. And you know, again, a person can never have a taina to those people, but you know what? Again, what's inspiring is, you know, to see the kind of people who, despite going through that, are able to pull themselves up. I think the trick to doing that is this kind of, you know, internalizing this kind of perspective. You know, a guy like an Elie Wiesel is able to look beyond, you know, the horrors of what he went through personally and say, look, you know, in the end of the day, I see the good in the world out there. I see myself as having been given a mission by virtue of, you know, the difficulties that I went through, and I'm going to take life and seize it by the horns and, you know, make it into something beautiful. It's a tremendous, you know, it's a tremendous undertaking to do something like that. I mean, I don't know that any of us would be capable of it if, God forbid, we were put to that test. But, you know, I think the way to do it, you know, lies in the words of the Malbim that are here. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, we'll see you next Sunday. I think we're going to have to invest in a bigger table.